Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Take it. Mulligan. A mulligan.
Mulligan.
You ever take that one mulligan in a basketball game? You get the possession.
Oh, like they're like, we just shot an air ball.
Yeah, like, time
Tatum's
out.
Like,
time
Tatum's
out.
Like, let me shoot that again. Same exact shot. Same run it back.
He just runs the same one. Are we live, Gail? All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the... We're just going to do it all over. There you go. Use promo code DMVR. I've got D-Line Co.
Hey, guys. Are we live?
We believe we are live.
Okay. So I should keep up with the facade that I enjoy sitting with you.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Yeah. They saw the real us once the stream ended and we all went our separate ways.
My
act was over.
Yeah. I just started calling you both F-face over and over.
It's all an act.
Over here, though, a man wearing all green. I wonder why. It's Brennan Vogt.
Yeah, just feeling lucky. It's a lucky color. You know what
is
I mean?
A lucky color.
Yeah,
for
I don't know. Something today is just a little pep in my step, fellas.
You do have a lot of pep in your step. Your hair is extra shiny.
That's right.
Athletic greens, I would guess.
That's what it is.
No,
man.
That's what his fingernails are extra shiny.
Yeah, can't you tell? By the way, Athletic greens is great, but we'll get to that. I'm sure.
As I was mentioning in the intake one, we have a great show lined up for you. We are going to talk about Andrew Nembhard, a 4-year point guard out of Gonzaga. Maybe a Monte Morris replacement. So we're going to talk about that as well. Some rumors swirling about Mr. Nugget. We're also going to talk about Ryan Saunders joining Michael Malone's staff and what that means. But we have to start, of course, by visiting the Haters Ball. Let's go ahead and get this party started. We're going to go straight to the Haters Ball. You know what's funny is this isn't even a Haters Ball for all of us. It's really just a Haters Ball for one. Like for me, there's a little Haters Ball. I'm going to join the Haters Ball. I'm not going to sit on the outside.
If you get invited to the Haters Ball, you don't turn that invitation down. But
do I have to like first throw it to my man? I don't know if you were watching the game last night, Vogt.
I caught it.
Did you catch it?
Yeah, I caught some.
Can you catch it? Fill us in on just like how your guy Jason Tatum did.
Well, you know, I'll start here. I thought that was his best game of the series. I really did.
That's true. It's because it was
factual. Yeah.
So. Glass half empty, glass half full.
Are you sure? Are you sure game one wasn't his best? I know he didn't shoot the ball well.
Did miss 14 shots, yeah, but those 13 assists.
Yeah.
I think that might have been his best one. Right. Yeah.
And then Golden State decided, you know what? We don't have to double team him at all.
Yeah. Well, there was a couple little adjustments they made, but we'll talk about them.
Listen, when it comes down to would you rather let NBA players hit wide open threes from the corner or a bad player take bad shots.
A bad player. Bad player. You're going so far. No, I mean, the Warriors, look, 104-94. They now move within one game of winning the championship this year. I don't think the series is over. I think it heavily favors the Warriors at this point. I think if you're the Warriors, you're feeling very good. If you're the Celtics, you're not. But look, this happened once before. The Celtics were down, you know, in a game six, and they end up winning game six and game seven to get the series. So they've kind of had their back against the wall. I don't want to count it out. And I think these two teams are sort of evenly matched enough. But this was a win to me of all of the ones. This was the series. Like, this was like the most important one. And the fact that you got I don't think this was a bad Steph Curry game. It was a bad shooting game. But nonetheless, a bad shooting game from Steph Curry. And you still lose, and not just lose, but lose by 10. Eric, this was a big statement win, I think, for the Warriors.
This game, more than any other in the finals, has like really, really highlighted the depth that the Golden State Warriors possess. Like, I mean, you're right. Steph Curry is just brings defenses to their knees. He makes them scramble, makes them run around, makes them consider every move he makes. But I mean, usually he's actually making 3-point.
He still makes them even with that attention.
Yes. I mean, the game we saw before this one was like so unbelievably transcended from him. It was jarring to watch him not be able to make any shots throughout. He was still finishing at the rim. He made 0 3-pointers, which I like still even saying
hasn't
that out
happened
loud.
For a long time.
Saying that out loud like doesn't even really make sense.
Has that happened in a playoff game?
I don't
game
know.
For him?
It was 223 playoff games or something like
something
that, or
crazy.
223 games since the last time he didn't make a three.
It's unbelievable. And and then we just see the rise of Andrew Wiggins. It's just a different player every game for the GD Warriors. It's
might
unbelievable.
Be his
embarrassment of riches.
Fan.
Andrew Wiggins might be my favorite
athlete of all time.
No, just angles. Oh. Well, kind of like yeah. One of my favorite angles to take on this. But I don't know. There's a lot of what's your angle? I mean, I know your angle on this. Do we just want to do? I mean, we are in the haters' ball. Do you want to
go for it, bro?
Honestly, give us some takes here. Like, there's it's not over, but we're 5 games into a finals.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes players and teams will try their hardest to tell you who they are, and you just have to listen. You know, you just have to accept that. By the way, on a serious note, Andrew Wiggins is a foxhole guy. It's 2022.
I know.
Carl Anthony Towns.
I know. Wow, you're going to haters.
I'm just no.
This is a different haters ball than I thought.
No, I'm just saying.
Carl Anthony Towns taking straight. He's been out of the playoffs.
You're in hater land.
I'm just saying, it's crazy that all this time later, this league is hilarious. Every 4 years, everything you think you knew about the players and the narratives completely flips on his head. Andrew Wiggins, unironically a foxhole guy, that feels like a joke.
It does feel like a joke. It's, I mean, it's funny because that's the number one overall pick, and it's amazing. We're like, he's unbelievable. Where did this guy come from? Like, every team
he's on a max contract.
The year before he was drafted, it was rigging for Wiggins. Like everyone was tanking so they could get the Maple Mamba, and it was like he was a guaranteed, like no doubt number one overall pick.
I don't think I'm little revisionist history. All that other stuff. You're saying, all that stuff you're saying is true, except for the no doubt part. Some years there's a first overall pick, but you don't know, are they a superstar? Or are they just like a good player? I think he was a little bit in that category. Clear first pick, but I don't know that he was a can't miss blue chipper.
Can't miss meaning just like he was the right choice to
be.
He was going to be a transformational player for whatever, I mean, at least in my world. I mean, I was not, you know, maybe absorbing the NBA as deeply as I am now, but, you know, it was like, man, what could we do to get Andrew Wiggins?
Right.
How could we possibly get a player like Andrew Wiggins?
Right.
And he goes to Minnesota, absolutely just gets buried. He becomes a joke. He gets traded for D'Angelo Russell. Like, it's crazy, man.
Draymond talking about it last night, he said the initial reaction to that was a flip that preceded another flip, that we just got Wiggins to trade him. But for us, we never viewed it that way. And he brought up that anecdote. I don't know if any of you saw that. I'm sure many of you did. That they got to talk to Tibbs about this after acquiring Wiggins.
May or may not have been a lie. Somebody's lying on this, I feel. But go ahead. Give the story.
First of all, you're probably right. I like that too. And he says that Jimmy Butler apparently loved Andrew Wiggins. And as Draymond says, we all know, Jimmy, if there's any softness to you, he just doesn't like you. It's just not the way he's cut.
Not a big fan.
I know we've litigated and relitigated this, but I still go back to, like, things have worked out for Denver in a very good way, but I know a lot of people back in the day would say, like, Jimmy Butler would have ruined Jokic. Like, he would have hated Jokic. He would have beat him down. This, that. Part of me is like,
Jokic, yeah.
I know, but part of me is kind of like, every single person that's ever been around Jokic says he's real, he's tough. And I'm like, I think Jimmy Butler would have been here and been like, wow, this dude's real and tough.
Loved he
would have probably, I'm telling you, I know we've relitigated this, but I just think like he would have been here and he'd be like, this dude's awesome.
Yeah.
My guy.
Can you pull up that comment from Voya there? Wiggins conned Wolves out of a max. Well, that one too. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. That's a Celtics fan. I just want to know, everyone's celebrating Andrew Wiggins today. That's a Celtics perspectives on it right there.
What's that?
Wiggins conned Wolves out of a max contract as then he's celebrated when he scores 20 points. Great gift.
Oh, man. Voya Celtics fan?
Yeah.
Is he really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Man, Andrew Wiggins has flipped this series. Andrew Wiggins, not even just through his offense, his rebounding is what
that's the thing about
everything.
It.
Who's a more complete player, Wiggins or Tatum?
In this, the wild thing is that if you only watch these last two games, it's like no question. It's not even a question.
Well, so here's, well, bringing it back to a Nuggets kind of angle on this, is where this stuff is so fascinating to me, man, is that it's one of my favorite stories in sports when a player like buys into the less honorable parts of basketball, the parts that aren't so celebrated. And Andrew Wiggins, I think, fell short as the things that we're talking about, the like, can you be the number one guy and the scorer and the highlight guy, and in some capacity the leader, and all of these different things that get celebrated. it's funny to me when a guy ends up being, I mean, the flip side of what Voya is kind of saying here, oh, it's great that now he scores 20 points. It's not that he scored 20 points, or I actually think he had like 28 or something. He had a good scoring
26,
game.
26, I think.
26, which is actually like really good for a guy. Like, that's a lot of points. Murray had 26 in a playoff game and the Nuggets won. You'd be like, oh, hell yeah, that's great. But what's more important to me is it's the winning plays. And it hasn't just been in this game. It wasn't just in the series. It's really been the entire playoff run. By the way, I don't think it's been all season. It's been parts of seasons. Like, if you coming into the playoffs, I wasn't predicting the Andrew Wiggins breakout playoff run. But it has increased as the stakes have increased. And I think there's almost this weird feedback loop. And this is an interesting thing about basketball. And it pertains to Michael Porter Jr. And it pertains to Aaron Gordon to a certain extent.
Definitely.
Wiggins is scoring 16 points, grabbing 16 rebounds. And the conversation is Andrew Wiggins. And I think some of the times these guys think, if I do those things, nobody's going to talk about me. I'm going to get underrated historically, this or that. And there's a funny thing. First of all, you have to win. But when you win and are doing these types of things, all of a sudden people are like, is he finals MVP? Oh, like, he has a real shot at it now of being, I don't think he will.
Oh, my God. If he steals finals MVP from Steph Curry, it goes from Andre Iguodala to Andrew Wiggins to
honestly,
Kevin Durant.
Like, can I tell you something? If I were a Steph fan, I'd almost be rooting for it because it almost makes his legacy better in this weird, like, inverted way. It.
Just quadruple down.
Just quadruple down on it. Like, that's the great thing about him is his value is so great, it makes other people appear better. And then the Andrew Wiggins gets traded somewhere and gets swept by the Celtics again. So, a la Kevin Durant. So I'm just saying, like, there's this really, there's something really cool and special about when a player, when it clicks for a player in a way that they're like, actually winning is what's celebrated.
Yep.
And oftentimes that is correlated with the shot making and this or that. But sometimes it's just correlated with that guy's a winner. And right now I would say, I can't believe I'm saying this. Andrew Wiggins is a winner. And I hope we see that from Michael Porter. I hope we see that from Aaron Gordon, because there's going to be nights when the Nuggets need 40 points from Michael Porter, and I think he's going to be more positioned than even a Wiggins to deliver it. But there's going to be a lot of nights, and I think if you talk about try to envision the most realistic scenario where the Nuggets win a title next year, the most realistic scenario for me is where Jokic dominates, Murray dominates fairly often, and every now and then – Porter goes off for 30, but more often than not, he just grabs 16 rebounds. Yeah. He has a big quarter. Yeah. He just punishes you for all those other ways. And the same goes for Aaron Gordon. Some nights he might score 20, but more often than not, it's just that, oh, wow, Jason Tatum only has 8 points through three quarters because Aaron Gordon's locked him up.
And then in between the cracks, you know, they're so prepared for everything that Steph is trying to do to free himself and others up that at times it felt like the very last thing they were prepared for was Wiggins just taking it strong to the rack.
Yep.
And he said after the game, when he was asked about what worked for him, he just said, just trying to be aggressive, going to the rim. Yeah. And this whole thing, everything you just described, that quote, I'm sure you feel the same way, Eric. You're watching this thinking, I hope AG is locked in. Because this, especially that first point of, that can be that new phase of his career and how he's understood as a player. The guy that helped Denver do it by doing those things. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the guy who couldn't help Orlando do XYZ.
And not only that, like, a player like Aaron Gordon, what he represents with Denver, and a player like Andrew Wiggins, a player like Kevon Looney, a player like Otto Porter, all of the Gary Payton, the two, represent guys that can just be a change of pace. Like, when the Warriors aren't able to hit threes and bring you down to your knees with a barrage coming from the sky, suddenly they're able to then just attack the rim and finish at the rim, grab gritty rebounds, like, be able to win in ways that are not expected, but are just gritty and just multifaceted.
There's one other angle to this, though, that's important for us to acknowledge, and that is the underlying of all of this is they're not beating you 130 to 120 the way you're talking about attacking the rim and Wiggins doing this. They're able to beat you because they defend. They just are so good defensively that it doesn't take an A game offensively.
Right.
And you can get a B. Like, even the Nuggets can give a B offensive effort with Aaron Gordon be the league scorer, Michael Porter or whatever, like Jokic having whatever. But they don't have the defense, and they really never have in the Jokic era, had the defense to be able to win consistently against the top teams with a B offensive game. And I think that's part of the difference here.
It's true. And the thing about the Denver Nuggets as opposed to the Golden State Warriors, we were talking about this last night, like, the number one star for the Golden State Warriors, Steph Curry, has the worst game I've ever seen him play offensively, right? I mean, he couldn't hit anything.
Bad shooting night.
That's right. Bad shooting night, right? Jokic doesn't have like nights like this. Like the baseline for Jokic, much, much higher. Like he's at the rim. He's not taking the degree of difficulty on the shots that Jokic takes as opposed to Steph Curry, much lower, right? Like, so you can count on minimum 25 points from Nikola Jokic. Right. Like you can just take that to the bank every single night. And if you can just then have other people around that can, you know, play these roles, like you're seeing all of the other Warrior players step up and sort of fill in the gaps when they're not able to just rely on Steph offensively and defensively. Like the Nuggets are in such a position with a player like Nikola Jokic that if they can just get Aaron Gordon, if they can get Michael Porter Jr., if they can get Bones Highland, all of these guys to watch this finals, buy in the way that these guys are buying in. I mean, the sky is absolutely the limit, and it just feels like we are seeing, you know, a lot in this finals that is directly applicable to the Denver Nuggets.
I also, looking at Boston right now, you know, there's a lot of talk about how got some of the role players, and they just look really tired. It was a very arduous grind to get to this place and stay healthy. And now you're seeing, like, it's very, very hard to grind away at those things, like, all season long. To just be so committed to the focus and the buy-in. And I think this was another ripple effect of the injuries, really. It's like by the time the Nuggets reached the playoffs, it just felt like there was so little left in the tank, you know? And so my point is, and I'm not just trying to harp on the injuries, but to be able to have enough to go that hard and commit to all the right things deep into the season, a lot of things have to break right for you heading into that.
God damn, man. Like, why couldn't Jeff Green play like Andrew Wiggins? You know what I mean? Seriously,
I think Aaron Gordon is the guy that I think is our Andrew Wiggins.
It's possible.
I mean, Jeff Green is more of like Gary Payton or Nemanja Bjelica. Like, you can't expect too much out of
him. I agree. But like the Nuggets were relying on him. I know. I mean, I'm not saying like Jeff Green is a guy we should rely upon. It's just like when the series in game three, it looked like, oh, wow, the Celtics have figured out how to bully the Warriors. They're going to just dominate them on the glass. They're going to get every offensive rebound. That's how they're going to win this series, just by putting them in a corner and just doing whatever they want. Like, and a guy like Andrew Wiggins, who's not, you wouldn't expect, he's not, he doesn't even play center. Like, he's a forward. He somehow changes the entire series through his rebounding. It's like a big guy like Jeff Green should be able to do the same sort of thing. Like,
but couldn't you see, if we go back though to Aaron Gordon, couldn't you see that? Like, some of us, it's trying to picture, what does Aaron Gordon bring? Number one, I mean, we want to see him have the defensive impact. We almost want him to be Draymond as much as anything, or Marcus Smart, where you're like, hey, shut down a guy for a series or a couple of series.
Yes.
But I do think the other part of this is, if Aaron Gordon doesn't have a guy to guard, we've seen this in last year's playoffs. Like, okay, you've got all right, Chris Paul and Devin Booker, like, I don't know, where does he fit in? He's not going to guard either of those guys. It could be as simple as, can you get a career high rebound?
Yep.
Just get a career high, whatever your career high is. Just make that the thing that you're going to punish teams, because it changes the complexion of how a team looks at you. And like right now, I'm looking at this thinking the Celtics probably have, like, as they're in the drawing board right now preparing for Thursday's game six, they're probably factoring in Andrew Wiggins' rebounding as a thing they have to control. It's like, we have to stop him. He has three of the top five rebounding games of his career in this series. Like, we have to keep him off. And guess what? That costs something. It costs resources, which opens up the door for other players. Right. And that, to me, is the real value that you're hoping to get from an Aaron Gordon and at times a Michael Porter. We all think he's going to score a bunch of shots, but sometimes it can be as simple as Michael Porter has every gift that Andrew Wiggins does physically. He's jumped super well. I'm just saying,
not the back, but yes.
Okay, but he jumps super high. He grabs rebounds in the similar way that Wiggins does, which is Wiggins just jumps and skies above. If you don't get a body on him, he out jumps you. And Michael Porter kind of has some of this too, where you're like some 6'5" guy loses sight of him and it's like, oh shit, I can't even compete now.
There was some of that. Man, this is the biggest bummer in these lost reps too. Like, these are the early years where he's supposed to be learning a lot of these lessons, because you could hear him start to reflect on the difference in the way Malone was treating and playing him when he was attacking the rebounds regardless of what his shooting
was.
That was actually the thing that got him into the rotation, and he grasped that too. So again, there are many reasons you want to get these guys back on the court, but one of them is so that he can start going through those sort of lessons and learning those answers and reflection.
Yeah. And then the Jason Tatum part of this. I mean, we all know why you dislike him. This has been a disasterful, like, finals for him. It really has. Like, it's so funny. and he could, he's 23. He still can get a lot better. But this is one of those ones where he really has been one of those players that has been given things, I think, a little premature. He was like anointed a little bit early. Oh, yeah. And now you're seeing like some of these like major limitations to him at this level. And granted, a lot of players will come up short in this stage like against a great defense. But nonetheless, it is kind of funny, like the knee jerk reaction and that he, you know, he's not finishing at three. He has zero dunks. How crazy is that? He has zero dunks in this series. he can't get to the rim. It's he can't get there.
Well, and if he does, he can't finish. He absolutely cannot finish.
Because he's doing the Harden thing, man.
He really is.
Every layup is like, I'm going to do this step through, rip through, draw contact. And I'm like, dude, just focus on the layup.
But he's not even getting contact. He's he's actually like contorting to avoid contact, creating circus shots. Where if he just went up strong and actually like was seeking contact, he would then have the opportunity to miss more free throws down the stretch.
I'm so sad that we don't get to see like Jamal Murray and Michael Porter. Like I'm just, next year is going to be honestly the ultimate like release of energy where I'm just going to be so excited to see these guys on the court. Cause I do look at like one thing about Jamal Murray, he doesn't do this BS. Like some of this is Marcus Smart last night. The game, I think the Warriors were going to win at this point anyway. Klay Thompson gives him a very clear off arm and it was probably should have been a foul. Ref didn't call it. Yeah. What does Marcus Smart do? Throw himself 10 feet backwards. Like he got murdered. Ref doesn't call it. And then Klay Thompson gets a wide open set three. If you just don't do that, you get pushed off. First of all, Klay doesn't shoot that one because he wasn't trying to shoot it. And then second of all, you just go out. Klay Thompson at this stage of his career might not be good enough to score on the defensive player of the year anyway. Just don't go for the BS. Just don't go for the BS. At a certain point, it's game five of the finals. Win it. Win it honestly. Yeah. Just do it honestly.
Totally agree.
And like when you do that, and then I don't know if you guys noticed, it turned into a downward spiral because then he goes on the other end and then pull flops on hit. And he just is on tilt. He's like out of control. And,
that was actually Udoka's message to them at halftime. It's like, yo, just play the game.
Just
We're too caught up in that stuff. Don't worry about it. Let's just focus on us.
It sucks when that stuff goes against you. Like, granted, so I had a lot of Boston fans mad at my comment. Like, it's off arm. What do you expect?
It
I just expect
foul,
you to do hell or high water, try to win. Not hell or high water, try to sell. Like, well, you sell it. That's how you get a call. You didn't get it, and you gave up a wide open three to maybe the second best 3-point shooter of all time.
And your team scored 17 points in the meaningful part of the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
They just absolutely ate themselves alive. Like they allowed things like that to just
Again, I don't want to make this the annoying thing here, but there is an important thing here, which is that Jordan Poole has the worst plus minus on the Warriors in this playoffs. And it's a little bit because he's been great or in this finals. And a little bit of it is because it's a tough matchup. Like the Celtics are going at him every time he's on the court. Jason Tatum had half of his points in a 2-minute span when at the end of the first quarter with Jordan Poole, they just kept switching him out on him. It's just a bad matchup for him. Who closes last night and who plays almost the entire second half other than Gary Payton, none other than Gary Payton, who ends up a plus 16 in 26 minutes and was huge for them. And it's another one of these things where it's like just that ability to around the edges of your star players, be able to switch out for what is needed is just so important.
Yeah. The Warriors are getting exactly what they need from every one of their players at the exact right time. Jordan Poole gets abused. He hits the biggest shot of the entire game
at that half quarter or whatever.
The end of the third quarter, there's less than a second left.
That was a huge one.
That turned everything. The Boston Celtics were up by
two. I think that put them up one. I think that put the Warriors up one.
The Celtics were, I believe, were up by double digits. Klay Thompson hits 2 3-pointers. Jordan Poole comes down, hits a 3-pointer, and then he hits that unbelievable circus shot 3-pointer. They get absolutely haymakered. It's 12 points in about a minute and a half.
Don't you think there's something to this though? And this is one of this unspoken magic pieces of the Warriors in the Curry era, is that I feel like they get that from their role players a lot. And there's something culturally that they have there that gets the most out of these guys. That's something they build throughout the season where if you survived it through them, if you're one of the guys in the foxhole, you're probably going to step up in the big moments.
Yeah. My feeling on this is that you feel safe under the umbrella that Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green create, and then you don't feel the pressure that Andrew Wiggins felt in Minnesota where he was like, I have to do this. Said, now it's sort of like, all right, like if I don't make this shot, like Steph Curry's going to make this shot. It's fine. It's like whatever. Like I'll just go out and sort of like.
Do you think Nuggets already have that? Because I mean, the Nuggets have that.
This is what I'm saying. Like if you Jokic.
I feel so safe with him.
I know. He's so safe in his arms. The problem is that like he needs, we need a full canopy for the.
It sucks because Murray was out, but I got to say, man, I feel pretty safe with Murray too.
That's the thing. If you have the core in place, and the core being now, hopefully, Jokic, MPJ, and
well, how
Jamal.
We have to qualify that. So
well,
I know,
at certain points, it's been Barton. Maybe I don't know. Like those three guys, if those three guys play to their ability
and play together,
you got to think a guy like Bones Highland is going to go absolutely so bonkers because he's just like, all right, green light. Like if these minutes for me don't go well, like all right, they don't go well. Jokic and Murray are going to play well. Like I'm just going to go and do whatever I can when I'm on the court.
That belief, we've been robbed of it. I do look at these two. We've talked about it the whole playoffs, but I look at these two teams and I just go, I don't know. Nuggets could compete with all of them.
Absolutely.
They just absolutely can. I mean, they have some things they have to shore up. This is a big offseason, but I just look at it and I go, they have the talent that those guys do at the top.
And they're flawed, but both of these teams are flawed, man. The remaining two teams, both of them are flawed. Yeah. By the way, one really quick point on Tatum. I know we got to keep it moving. There is an inherent incredulousness that I bring to this thing that I honestly can't right now because for once everyone is seeing the same thing that I'm seeing.
I love it. So, I love it. Well, he does have more turnovers than any player ever in finals history.
His assist to turnover
only through five games, and we are very close in the playoffs. Now, one really close to 100 turnovers in the playoffs.
And you're right, Voya. He's only 23, but he's been in the league for 15 years, so whatever. Okay.
Let's have a break.
Breckenridge Brewery is the official beer of DNVR.
I can't believe Voya's out here standing his drink.
By the way, I love Voya. This isn't real
beef.
There's
no way Voya's ever been to Boston. There's just no way.
Oh, he wouldn't feel the way he does
about
the Celtics.
There's no way.
All right, here we go. Vet Brew has beer for any occasion. Hating on the Celtics, rooting for the Avalanche. There's so many ways to enjoy the official beer of DNVR, and you can find any of Breck's fantastic selection via the Breck Beer Locator. Tell it where you live, tell it where you're looking for. They'll tell you where
Avalanche
to go.
Amber Ale, baby.
How about a little promotion? Everybody loves promotions. What's better than the Avs scoring two goals in the first period? A free beer to wash those two goals down. On game days, start your Avs game with an Avalanche Amber Ale at any bar or restaurant and save that receipt because if the Avs score two or more goals in the first period, Breck Brew is going to pay for that beer, baby, via rebate. Just upload your receipt on breckbrew.com.
They got a good goalie, right, Tampa Bay?
Yes.
They do.
Okay. Oh, man, I love this. Unstoppable object versus movable force.
That's right.
Immovable.
Sports.
Immovable. We know what you mean. We know what you mean.
The third law of Newton. Okay. DraftKings, are you ready for NBA champs to be crowned? Join the finals action with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can bet, make any $5 NBA bet and get $150 in free bets instantly. That seems pretty cool. Looking to turn another small bet into a big payday during the NBA finals? Well, you can with DraftKings same game parlays. Here's how it works. You combine multiple bets, Eric, like you could, like, who's going to win on the money line, total threes made, under on Tatum points, and just like that, you've got a shot at an even bigger payout. This NBA season, a customer placed a $5 same-game parlay and won over $5,000. I can't promise you that's going to happen, but I can promise you can try with DraftKings Sportsbook.
Yeah.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code DNVR. Make any $5 bet during the NBA Finals and get $150 in free bets instantly. That's promo code DNVR, only at DraftKings Sportsbook. An official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
That's freaking
good stuff. Good stuff. All right, back here, segment two. It's time to talk about the draft again. And before we get to the draft, you know, a couple names have started to emerge as you talk about potential trade targets. I mean, I think everybody kind of pencils in Barton as a guy that the Nuggets are probably going to look to move. I'm not saying he's going to be moved, but I think the Nuggets, when you look at the guys most likely to, he's probably atop the list. There's kind of a new second name that is almost number two here.
Man.
It just seems like it. Again, I'm not reporting. This is not something that I personally have heard, by
Mr.
the way.
Mr. Trey.
I've heard some things. But part of it, I haven't asked the specifics of this. I don't know. I just don't. We'll see some of these other reports. But Monte Morris's name is starting to pop up as a guy that, not just from, by the way, like Denver people, but even outside of it. I think Jake Fisher had a note in there about Monte being a guy that has been out there. So Mr. Nugget, Monte Morris. And by the way, today, Matt Moore hinted at, I guess, the idea that Bones is not an untradeable piece, that it's even possible Bones finds himself traded this year. Mm. We know that the Nuggets themselves have positioned themselves for, like, hey, don't be surprised. This is the summer where everything is on the table. But let's just start with Monte here. You know, if he is gone, just your initial thoughts about it. Sounds like he's a piece that I at this point would not at all be surprised if he was traded.
Okay, if we're talking basketball perspective, Monte Morris represents a very solid top end backup point guard. This is something that is not unattainable in the NBA. You can find guys to replace the production of Monte Morris. You can find guys to do a lot of what he does. Culturally, I hate the idea that they are going to erode so much of what has made the Nuggets who they are so quickly. I mean, again, like, I'm not saying it's happening. We don't know if it's going to happen. I'm a little unnerved by the idea that, you know, it would be in back-to-back trades if it happens that way, that we move a guy that Jokic says he wants to play with for the rest of his life. And
right.
then next goes in consecutive, I guess, seasons would be Mr. Nugget is traded, right?
Right.
Gary Harris into Monte Morris, like...
That is consecutive seasons. That would be weird. Oh, right. Man, is the Mr. Nugget a curse?
Dude, the curse of Mr. Nugget? Like, I don't want to get into the curse of Mr. Nugget.
I hate learning that.
I don't love the idea.
If he gets traded, I think we might have to... it's a kiss of death.
I don't love the idea, but it does feel like...
I don't think it is,
A
actually.
Name like Monte Morris being involved feels like it feels like we are truly entering a new era of Nuggets basketball, which, again... Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. It's just different. I don't know. It makes me uncomfortable. That's it.
If you want to talk about a hard turn away from the Tim era, for better or worse, I mean, that's like the easiest way.
Barton and Monte?
Or just like, trading Mr. Nugget. I mean, it's from a basketball perspective, here's the part I think very few people want are eager to say out loud. Makes some sense.
Right.
They drafted Bones.
Yeah, it depends on what it is.
To Eric's point, like, and I don't mean this as a cold term, just in the literal usage. In the NBA, is Monte Moris expendable? I think he's non-essential.
Yeah,
I don't
in like 2K. Like, in like no 2K, problem. Let's trade him, no problem.
But there is this element of everything they've done to build this sort of culture and do right by guys.
It's so important.
And like Monte could not have bought in any harder to just being a part of the Nuggets on and off the court. It would feel like a different type of roll of the dice than we've seen to this point.
I think the loss of Conley was less than the actual impact it had. It had this like thing where you had a vision for the storybook, right? The storybook was these guys all do it together, and Monte's there, and like Wancho's back somehow. Like, I don't know. Like there's this idea of like there's this idea of it's like the storybook ending, and I feel like that's gone. But guess what? That was probably always gone. That's the thing about it is that winning a title requires a lot of uncomfortable things to have to happen.
No question.
And the discomfort of, say, a Tim Conley, of a J. Michael Green, of a Monte Morris are actually significantly less discomforting than some of the bigger moves you might think, which would be like a Michael Porter Jr. or a Jamal Murray. Like sometimes those are the things that it takes. You know, Monta Ellis was the most beloved Warrior of a decade.
Yep.
And he gets moved and it was like, we'll never recover from this. They actually recovered quite nicely. They didn't know it. And so for me, I look at it, my pragmatic self says, we've talked about this enough for me to say, Monte, Bones, I don't know that both of those guys are on the final form, so you have to pick one. And then, by the way, it is even possible that neither of them are on the final form. Like, there is a world in which Jamal Murray is your scoring guard, and then you have some defensive guys around them. So I look at that report. I just say I'm not surprised. The Nuggets have positioned themselves from Michael Malone to Calvin Booth to Josh Kroenke of, hey, this is the summer of some unpopular decisions, maybe some unpopular trades, but they're going to be things that ultimately pay off. Mm. And Monte Morris represents that. So
let's hope they pay off. It's just, you know, it's just the Denver Nuggets have pulled themselves up by their bootstraps. They were in the absolute nadir of the NBA. The worst. They were so they were down so bad. It's hard to describe during the Brian Shaw era. They made a lot of uncomfortable moves by getting rid of George Karl, by moving on from a lot of players that felt like they were, you know, sort of foundational to that 57 win season, and replacing them with guys like, I don't know, Nate Robinson. And,
I don't think you're headed there, though. That is
I'm just saying, like, so the way that this team has now been built, because we are in a fairly unpopular destination for NBA players, as we've learned, is that they have created a culture, a system where people feel like it is a little bit more familial. These are They're not skipping steps. There is accountability that's based on the fact that there's personal relationships with things that exist, not just on a piece of paper, but are just like a little bit, they're above, you know, things you talk about with roster construction.
Right.
And to turn away from that, I don't know if it's like, you know, maybe it's bad, maybe it's good. It just makes you a little uncomfortable because it tells you very clearly that the strategy has changed, which they've been very clear about. So we'll see what this looks like. I'm just, you know, I don't know. We'll see what comes, baby.
We'll see what comes. By the way, just a quick aside. If there was no Monte and no Bones, is there like a clear candidate for Mr. Nugget?
Oh my God.
Jokic is just too good, right?
He can't be Mr. Nugget.
Jokic is Emperor Nugget.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Mr. Nugget officially cannot be the best player.
Is it Jamal?
I don't think he I think Kyrie right. think he's Mr.
Nugget.
Too.
Should we clearly define what it is to be Mr.
No.
Nugget?
No, I don't think it has. No. I think
it's like MVP.
It's just like pornography, you know, when you see it.
That's right.
Honestly, like I would argue, I think there's a really good chance that if those two guys both got traded, the next Mr. Nugget might not currently be on the roster.
Oh my God.
It might be a weird addition. There actually might be a Mr. Nugget vacancy that doesn't materialize till like December.
Look at this comment though, dude.
AG?
The best chance to fill it internally might be AG.
Holy smokes.
He does have sneaky.
You know what? If DraftKings odds would have AG at like plus 150.
That's a good one.
It's still not great, but it'd be about plus 150 if that were the case.
Holy smokes. Man, that would be tough. I was not ready for this conversation. AG is Mr. Nugget. I got to wrap my head around this.
He's primed. He's positioned himself for it. He's a little...
I'm not rooting for Monte and Bones to be traded but you know what? AG as Mr. Nugget would be a fun one. It's like, you know, we'll have to see.
DraftKings
has Bones. If Monte gets traded, Bones Highland is like minus 900 to be
Bones Highland currently Mr. Nugget in trading or Prince Nugget.
Yeah.
Prince Nugget.
But that brings us, so if there is a replacement here, so if you lose Monte Morris,
so dumb.
You lose Monte Morris, do you have a point guard? Well, one name that you might have coming in the draft, Andrew Nembhard, who right now, so here's an interesting one out of Gonzaga, 4-year player. Yep. He actually spent a couple years, where was it, Florida? Yeah, 2 years in Florida, 2 years in Gonzaga, was a starter basically the entire time. I think he only started half of his junior season, but out of all the career games he played, I think he started all but like 10 of them total. And he has, you know, a pretty impressive pick and roll game. I think this is how I would describe him. So if we look at the strengths here, pick and roll playmaking, pick and roll scoring, on-ball defense. Let's put the on-ball defense aside here for a second. College is less of a pick and roll game than the NBA by a lot. So when you look at guys, especially point guards, sometimes they could be great college point guards, but it's like, I don't know if that's going to translate because they won't be doing those things. And then vice versa. I think he's a little bit of the second one. He's a really good pick and roll player. Mm-hmm. He's a really smart, really heady pick and roll player in ways that are not necessarily flashy. Like sometimes you get, I would call Luka Doncic a flashy pick and roll player, because he's so dominant at what he does, or James Harden, they're so dominant that it's like obvious. He's a guy that I think is almost Monte-esque in his ability to score at three levels.
Right.
He's got a good off the dribble 3-point shot. He's got a mid-range game to him, and he can get to the rim and do some things there. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But he can score at three levels, and more than anything, he just seems to have a great feel for the timing of those passes in the pick and roll. I would compare him to Jokic in this one way. He's not very athletic. He's not like a super explosive player. We'll get to that in a second. He plays at his own pace, though. It doesn't seem like players speed him up. You know, he plays the pick and roll. He kind of does it slow, and he gets exactly what he wants out of it. And these guys could be running twice as fast around him, but he just kind of knows what to do.
I saw that. I likened him to Luka in that way, but like a much obviously lesser version of Luka. But the same thing, like he does not look quick, but he seems to sort of get around his guy. And I saw that we have weaknesses is finishing at the rim. I don't know. Like when I was watching, perhaps I didn't watch enough highlights. It looked like he had a really good.
So here's what's interesting about it. We'll get to it in a second. Put a pin in that because it is an interesting note. Because I called him a three level scorer, and you're right. He does have some very creative finishing around the rim. He has a good floater. It's funny because we talk about Monte leaving. Monte was, I believe, a 4-year star. Was he 3-year or 4-year?
Four.
I can't remember. It was 4-year, right?
Four.
So he was a 4. He kind of reminds me of Monte a little
bit. Yes, he does. Absolutely.
And that he has that in between game. Now, a couple differences to him. One, Monte averaged 12 points his sophomore year, 14 his junior year, 16.5 his senior year. Nembhard is basically 11, 9, and 12 points those 3 years. So we're talking about a significant, in my opinion, 4 or 5 points per game. You know, that's a significant drop off from what you were getting from Monte. So at least the numbers show he wasn't quite that. One other difference, though, is that he's 6'5". Monte Morris, yep. Of course, 6'2". A pretty big difference. Like, Monte is a small, undersized guy. Andrew is a bigger one. There are some differences. Sometimes we can get a little too into the, like, player style comps. It's just a little bit of a comp there. And then the 6'6 wingspan. So 6'5", but only a 6'6 wingspan. This is a real good test case for, like, he's tall, but doesn't have the great wingspan. In fact, what's Monte Morris's wingspan? I'm going to look it up.
That's a good question.
I'm looking it up right now. 6'4". So even he has a longer wingspan, I guess. He's, by all intents and purposes, bigger than Monte. And then his on-ball defense, here's one that's really tough when we talk about strengths. He had Chet Holmgren behind him, elite shot blocker. Very good system in Gonzaga. Like, guys know what they're doing, smart. It's hard for me to say, is he a good defender or not? He seemed to have a good positional defense. He has the size, and he seems to know what to do in terms of moving his feet. The fact that he's not a great athlete, that's the one I would. That's the one piece of this detail that I would be uncertain of. In the limited film watch study I did, I'm like, I'm not sure if he's a great defensive player or not.
And between that and the length, it really does seem like versatility is the name of the game right now. You know, defensive prowess in and of itself is great, but in the form of someone who, A, can fit into multiple lineups, but B, give you a little bit more of that switchability in theory, hopefully. And so he doesn't scream that stuff at me, for sure.
Yeah, the one thing that I was like, I actually really like his game, and I did see a lot of Monte Morris in him. I did see a little Luka Doncic. I did see,
Man, and the Luka Doncic one, I got to be honest, man.
I mean, he's just in
the speed of which he goes into a pick and roll. Okay.
He can't be sped up.
Okay.
And the elite pick and roll, I saw a lot of great passes. The one thing I don't love is jump shot, because he starts so low.
Yeah.
It feels like it'll get blocked a lot. Like, but it did look like he made a lot. I mean, his points per game average being lower than Monte, I mean, I think speaks a lot to the fact that just Gonzaga attracts high talent.
Could be, yeah.
You have a guy like Chet Holmgren. You have Timmy on your team. Like,
Monte played with George Niang. Like, he had another NBA player on his team. You know,
Monte was also just a very, very good college player.
Yeah.
You know, he had a great career. I do think, like, it may seem a little confusing to be like, all right, you got to trade Monte so you can get a guy that reminds you of Monte.
I know, but bigger. He's bigger than Monte.
Well, I also think, too, the idea here is then you're searching for whatever that kind of wing upgrade is via the Monte trade as opposed to in the draft. Right. So the whole equation kind of shifts.
Well, here's what's interesting. So if we go to weaknesses, because I want to come back to the Monte comp here, but if we go back to weaknesses now, the speed burst part of this is interesting because, again, the athleticism, he plays at his own pace, and that's important. But is there the explosiveness? Sometimes you can have – you're not a great athlete, but you have the ability to kind of one step go into something and finish high. He doesn't really have that. Like, he actually is a pretty groundbound player. He's a 2-foot jumper, and he doesn't have a lot of the, like – again, it's not burst, but even Monte has this where he can just get a one step going and then kind of go to a hook shot where he has a little bit, so you have to go at him. He doesn't have that. And that's why the finishing at the rim, like, there's some of the low lights when you watch him where he doesn't just get a shot blocked. He gets, like, packed. You know what I mean? Like, he'll go up against every now and then an NBA caliber center or something from the college ranks that will, like, he'll challenge him at the rim. The guy won't even drop, and he'll just be like, dude, what are you doing? Right. And it makes you think, like, how's he going to score on Rudy Gobert? How's he going to score on Clint Capella? Like, he doesn't have the burst, and he doesn't have – now, here's why I wanted to come back to Monte.
Just give it to Jokic.
If you guys notice, this is one of the most underrated things about Monte and where he really improved from where he was as a college player to where he was as an NBA player. He worked nonstop. Remember, he went to the G League his first year. Nonstop on how to become a creative and crafty finisher at the rim.
Yes.
And if you think about it, he might be the craftiest finisher on the Nuggets roster, him or Jamal. He really does have a lot of those, like – weird, like, fast break. Monte Morris one-on-one against the defender is, like, awesome. He's like, it's like his most underrated skill because he's so good at, like,
just chucking it in from these weird angles.
Crazy angle, and he gets it in over the defense, and he worked really hard to get that. But again, it took Monte 1 year of the G League, then he came back, and then now we're 5 years into the Monte experience, and now he's at that level. So can a guy like this, you talk about trying to win a championship this year, is he Faku finishing at the rim? Maybe a little bit better, but is he just not quite? Is he Moutier?
I mean, he's
just
not, like, 5'6", so that helps, but I get what you're saying.
But he's just not quite good enough to put the pressure on the rim, so all that other stuff at the NBA level is diminished a little bit. I worry a little bit about that. And then lastly, I would say the lateral quickness part of this for defense. again, the Chet Holmgren piece is tough for me because Chet helped him out. They had the defensive pieces. I just don't know. Is he going to be laterally quick enough to guard De'Aaron Fox? And again, maybe that doesn't matter early on in his career, but if you're trying to win a title with a guy, he's going, if he's not good at that, he's going to be switched out against those guys in a play. He might have to guard Jalen Brunson for you to win a playoff series.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of examples of his defense. I was looking for it. Like, I mean, that is, if we bring anybody on the Denver Nuggets that does not provide us with perimeter defense, we're making a huge mistake. Right. I mean, that is the number one need for this squad. And especially if we move on from a beloved Nugget to get a guy that's just a bigger version of him, but like is not any more effective at that, then I mean, that would feel like a big mistake. But all that being said, like, I like this guy.
So interesting detail here. He played with RJ Barrett in high school, which is kind of interesting. And then he played obviously with Kispert, Suggs, Ayayi. He's played with a lot of NBA players. And I do think this is important. Like, we start to talk about the Villanova players or the Kentucky guys that always seem to outperform their draft position. I think Gonzaga's right there in terms of, again, NBA pick and roll player, a skill that's going to translate a little bit more, but also just having done it with elite guys, it probably does sharpen you a little bit. So he's an interesting one. Now, here's the last piece of it is some of the mocks have him as like the 45th, 50th pick. The Nuggets have 21 and 30. I think he's more of a 30 than it is a 21.
Right, right.
But here's the thing. I've been talking to people when the report came out from Jake Fisher, just kind of prying around. The message I got back was the mocks are way off at him. Wouldn't be surprised if he goes ahead of 30, meaning like if he is taken actually in the 20s, not by Denver, but by somebody else. And somebody also said, just watch the mocks. As you get closer to the draft, more intel comes in and you start to see more movement, not on everybody's mock, not on some random mock you're going to get on FanSided. But when you talk about the guys who are a little bit more plugged into these things, you'll start to see the mocks get a little bit more refined.
Right.
And he's already a guy that I saw, for example, Sports Illustrated's mock draft has him as 33. So that's from 48, 50 to 33. Just some intel that he might be one of those guys that surprises a little bit in where he's taken. So I don't think it's that much of a reach. I've had a lot of people say, I feel like that's a reach at 30. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes top 35. So if it's Denver at 30 or if it's somebody else even before that or around that, that might be more in line.
And again, I don't love the idea of a development or project pick, but they're hard to avoid when drafting. But this whole equation changes if the point of the Monche trade is seeking out that upgrade, right?
Yeah.
And that archetype of player. And if you find a defensive upgrade via that trade, then I think the way you approach this draft kind of changes a little bit.
Isn't it hilarious that he played with RJ Barrett? RJ Barrett's been in the league for like, it feels like how's for 5 years. This is like when Michael Porter came in. He was like, I was ahead of Jamal Murray in high school. Like, how's he been in the league for all this time ahead of me? Like, what's going on? Yeah, so kind of wild to think about. I'm intrigued by this guy. I'm not going to lie. He has, I think, my limited scout on him, maybe some bust potential. I don't know that you want to go into next season. Again, Monte, I think, really benefited from the fact that when he came in, he basically had a redshirt year.
Yep.
And it was so good for him, and he made a huge leap, and then he was awesome the first year. This guy, is that Denver's plan? You know, if you lose a Monte Morris, are you counting on this as your third guard? And if so, like, if he's your third guard and everything goes well throughout a season, or your third point guard, I mean, great. Maybe that's perfect for him because he'll probably play 25 games and he'll get just enough experience. But if you have an injury and all of a sudden it's a Faku situation where it's like, hey, we have to survive 3 months.
Those never happen, though.
And he has
to, come on, what are you talking about?
We have to survive 3 months and we really need this guy who's never played. Our season depends on him. That could be a tough spot for him to be in. So I'm intrigued.
Yeah. There's something nice, though, about in that scenario. I mean, a guy that's been in college for 4 years, like those guys come in and they're like more poised, generally speaking. Like,
yeah,
there's, I don't know, like, I don't, we'll see. I don't know. I'm uncomfortable with the idea of just replacing Monte Morris with a guy that reminds you of Monte Morris. I'm just uncomfortable in general.
Yeah, man, I just don't love the idea. Even if it makes the team better, it's still
I know. It just makes me feel icky, which makes me, I don't like that.
All right, let's take a break. On the other side, we're going to get to Ryan Saunders, kind of dish on him what we think of that move and tie up some loose ends.
Whether it's Nembhard, Monte, any rookie, whoever it is you're trying to watch in a Denver Nuggets uniform, you can.
Can you? How?
And that's not because of the some monumental change that you missed overnight to the situation at large. It's just because of the great work from our friends at Ivaka TV, who are working so hard to put Altitude Sports and AT&T Sportsnet and other national channels on your TV. Right now, Ivaka service is available in Denver and Colorado Springs. That should be directly relevant to many of you. So don't miss the Avs. Chase that cup. Don't miss the Nuggets upcoming season, putting those pieces back together. Rapids, Mammoth, Look, man, you can watch all your Colorado sports, and you should feel entitled to doing that. I really think so. You're taxpayers. You live here. You're fans. They should be on your TV. They can be on your Ivaca TV, and you can get Ivaca TV by going to ivaca.tv/DNVR and then use the promo code DNVR. You'll get $10 off your first 3 months. That's only $15 per month for the first 3 months, plus receiver, no contracts, no hidden fees. Excuse me. Ivaca TV gets the people going. You know what gets me going, Eric?
Talking about Jason Tatum.
That's correct.
Whatever's in that styrofoam cup that you're drinking.
It's lean.
It's lean.
I thought it was purple lemonade.
I can't believe I stand lean yesterday.
You didn't stand lean.
Like, people used to think red meat.
Oh, that's right. You actually equated codeine-based cough syrup mixed with Sprite
utterly
to
absurd.
Red meat.
Utterly absurd.
It could be like Four Loco for
that
all
was,
I know.
That
I
was literally the worst taste cake ever uttered on the internet. I can't believe you didn't bring that back up till right
people
now.
People in the chat, like, when I went back and looked at it, were like, bro, this
bro,
is
this not. Thing. Yeah.
Like, sorry, I just learned about this 10 seconds ago. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what the kids are doing these days.
On that one. But listen, only half of that picture was wrong. The other half was great. Get your pre-rolls.
Go to
Light Shade Dispensary. Use promo code DNVR for 25% off any purchase you make.
It's honestly, guys, our number one way you could support us. The easiest way. Like, you already have a dispensary. Make it yours, Light Shade. Go there. Use promo code DNVR. Get 25% off. It's like you win, we win. And it's honestly, it's actually really meaningful to us that you guys make them. We love these people.
And go in person. I mean, when you go in person, you can actually talk to these people and make a lot of joke about consuming this stuff recreationally or for whatever use. But it's important to understand like why you're using it, what you're using. And when you go and talk to a bud tender, you can get a much better understanding of what it is you're buying. And you can actually seek to address specific issues if that is the reason you smoke or if there's a particular high you're looking for. Don't just hit click online somewhere. Yeah, go in person, talk to these people, and most importantly, scream DNVR in their face.
Yeah, yeah. And don't let me, D-Line, just jam some weird, dirty joint in your face outside. Like, make choice. Get the right stuff.
Be an informed, responsible weed consumer with Light Shade Dispensary, Colorado's premier dispensary. And we're back.
And we are back. Final segment here. And the Nuggets, guys. This was a Friday news dump in the Denver Nuggets land. The Nuggets have added to their coaching staff. Michael Malone has added to it. And who did he go with? None other than Ryan Saunders. Ryan Saunders. Well, he hinted at it. It was going to be somebody with head coaching experience. It was true.
Okay.
Check. Yeah, brings it. That was really the only thing he kind of hinted at. And lots of assistant experience. Someone who's been around the game. Okay. So now it is kind of funny. Like, the number one takeaway I think most people have here is Michael Malone, son of Brendan Malone, a lifer in the NBA. Michael Malone, since he was in diapers, courtside for NBA games. Like, he's steeped in the culture. You got David Adelman, son of Hall of Fame coach Rick Adelman. You know, same thing. Yeah. Since he was in diapers, he's been along the sidelines. Then you got Ryan Saunders, son of, I think, soon to be Hall of Fame coach Flip Saunders. So you're talking about three guys who have a very unique 0.0001 percentile life in that they're guys that grew up around the NBA. There's almost nobody that can say that. They grew up around the NBA. They have that similar background. They're steeped in it. And now they're joined. Kind of, what's your first takeaway here? And by the way, this replaces Jordy Fernandez, mm-hmm. who has been an assistant for the Nuggets for several years, who went to Sacramento, so there was a vacancy. Eric, I want to start with you. What's your thought when you see Ryan Saunders?
I mean, you know, the first thought that anybody has when Ryan Saunders' name is invoked is that, like, he was a terrible head coach.
Yep.
But that doesn't mean anything because he's not being asked to be the head coach.
That's
he's
a good
being
point.
Asked to be to lend his observations and not make difficult decisions. I mean, the job of a head coach is very different than the job of an assistant coach. Yeah. The job of an assistant coach is to be, I mean, you always want, like, when things are working really well in a competition-based industry, I believe, you want to have, like, the hard-headed, you want to have the mom and dad relationship. You want to have the coach and the assistant coach. The head coach is where the buck stops. The assistant coach is you're the guy that's on your side. You can speak to him, like, you have like the softer relationship and you can sort of like feel like you have a kinship and an understanding like that in my experience has always been the best role of the assistant coach. So from that standpoint, like in what you're saying that he has been around the NBA, he's been around a lot of personalities in the NBA for a long period of time. Like he definitely understands that side of the world. I don't know exactly what he brings from an expertise standpoint. but it's an interesting dynamic that I actually hadn't seen before and thought about, like all of these sons of head coaches that are coming together to form a coaching staff. Like, and frankly, like I don't know what specific assistant coaches do that make teams better or worse. Like, I just don't personally understand it enough. Like, I just know that if Michael Malone likes him and feels comfortable with him, like, okay, that's fine by me.
You think so?
I do. I mean, because
game, like, theory this out though a little bit, because one of the things, I'll go ahead and get into my my top concern here. And again, I'm with you in large part about the right answer to the, is this a good hire, a bad hire, is probably unknowable.
Yeah.
Or something that we at least won't know right now. Maybe, you know, it's a little prying. We'll probably get to here.
Sure.
The thing I think with Michael Malone is he's very, 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 very headstrong.
Yes.
You know, he's very like, you got to convince him. And I don't think he's one of those guys that doesn't like to be convinced otherwise. I just think he's somebody that, like, you can't just mildly suggest things or that. So I think he needs strong-minded assistants that can be very vocal and can maybe even challenge him and maybe even have it so that he says, hey, run with this. And he's talked about, you know, what are you losing Jordy Fernandez? Well, that's going to be your defensive coordinator. You're bringing Ryan Saunders in now to be your de facto defensive coordinator. Well, he wasn't really known for defense, and he wasn't necessarily known for being strong-minded or strong-willed extremely vocal. He's very well-liked. He's a player's coach.
Yep.
He was extremely young, and he's actually younger than me, which is a little bit weird. So you got all those things, and I just wonder, is he the guy that's going to tell Michael Malone, you're doing it all wrong? That's the only thing I would wonder.
Right. Or is he going to be kind of a yes man in some regards as well? And I don't know if it's honestly a yes man.
As in, like, yes man almost implies like a brown noser.
I wonder if
he just doesn't have the ability to tell Michael Malone, you don't know what you're doing, which is like, I think everybody needs that.
I really think we should do this differently. Yeah. I wonder that too. But then the flip side of that is this is a guy who Malone has a relationship and level of trust with. And perhaps that is within that same conversation, a strength in the end. So that is one of the things I hope to get a grasp of. And then to your point, Eric, I do think it is so hard to know. Like, what do we know about how the Wolves locker room responded to him? You know, like, we can ask Dane and we can paint a picture and ask other people in Minnesota and all that, but it's different than being there, than covering it.
By all accounts, though, I will say this. By all accounts, everybody truly loved him.
That's what
I heard
as well.
So he was a guy that he had a horrible record as a head coach, and it's not lost on me that when they replaced him with Chris Finch, there were other things that happened along the way, but that there was a really stark, like, cultured shift from that moment. So it's like, okay, they became a more serious team. Again, it's not all one thing, but at least it's part of the story. But I will say that he was a guy that I think everybody loved, even through losing, which is very rare.
Right, I agree. And so, hopefully he's a guy players will respond to. I wonder if they pick up on that at all. Like, this guy's been around the league his entire life. This isn't just me sort of listening to any random person on the sideline. I'd be curious to know. But I ultimately agree with Eric on this stuff. Until it gets started, it's so very hard to know the answers to this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Just pieces of this here. I don't have strong takes on him. I mean, we'll kind of, I'm sure, get to learn a little bit more and more about him and what he does. But he is taking on a pretty important role. I will say, when he was a head coach, I think he got the head coach's job at like 31 or 32, because he's 35 or 36 now. He's still really young. And I think that's always an interesting thing to think back to. I mean, what was Mark Daynott? I think he's also like 36 or so. He's not that old. But it's very rare for a guy sub 40 to be the head coach. And for him to go to a young team, I mean, he was the same age of half the guys on the roster. Think about how weird that is.
Yeah.
That's a really weird dynamic. So some of his failures in Minnesota should be taken with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And there's something to be said about being, again, that bridge between the head coach and the players. And if you have a guy that's maybe closer to their age range, that, you know, this herd of things like, I don't know, lean, knows what they are.
Do you think Ryan Saunders has heard of lean?
He probably watches the DNBA show.
You think so?
I would think so. He knows of it as...
You don't think he
I think you and he learned about it at the same time.
You don't think he likened it to red meat or something?
I think
or
he
like
probably
eggs,
would.
Egg yolks?
Or Four Loko? I don't know. Probably.
Egg yolks aren't good for you. Or are they? We don't know. I feel like they might be.
Everything is up in the air.
I just keep eating them.
It goes back and forth.
Like, all I know is that every time I watch a Denver Nuggets game, they interview a different guy at halftime that I've never seen before.
Who did they keep trotting out this year?
I don't know who that guy is.
Either,
there was like a guy.
No,
that was a weird
man,
one, man. And I'm like,
my cousin? He seems like I met him at Thanksgiving.
We've done this before, but who's your top half coming out of halftime interview coach of all? You go back the whole history. I have an easy number one.
Do you?
Actually, you know what? I don't remember Chris Finch in this role, so I can't say if it was him or not. But I have an easy number one. A guy I just always liked.
Please.
Who did it. Nobody else?
No, I
you're off the floor.
This is now something I've thought through. So
Mike Anori. Loved Mike Anori, man. Mike Anori, okay. When he took over Summer League that one year, I just felt like it was the he would sit there and hold court for forever. He'd give all kinds of details away. He was the best.
Shout out Mike Anori.
Shout out Mike Anori.
Minnesota's own.
Wolves assistant Mike Anori.
I see people, true teller saying Ryan is a yes man. Sometimes you also need a yes man. You know what I mean? Like sometimes like Michael Malone has a vision in place and he's like, okay, help me execute this. Yeah. And like, not, you don't always need like a guy that's like, no. But like at a certain point, like maybe they just like each other and they have honest conversations about basketball. And it's not just like, man, we got to change this. It's just sort of like offering his opinion. You know, there are different ways to impress or make an impression upon the way things are done versus just being adversarial, like, particularly when you're with people all day, every day. Like we have conversations about things that we do here all the time.
Oh, D-Line is classic yes man.
I am a classic yes man.
Oh, that's classic yes man.
Everyone's like, just can't appease you enough.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, I have a shirt. I'm like, yes. That's a great idea. I'll do it right now. No problem. But there's something nice about just having people with you that just sort of like, you create a positive culture. You create a culture that people want to be at work. And then the players that are headed by Nikola Jokic that actually is really creating the culture on the court, it feels comfortable and things just work well. I mean, like, I don't want a guy to come in and just be a jerk. Like, that just says, like, no, that we're just doing defensively, we're doing this all wrong.
Difference, though, the jerk aspect of it. It's more of like, here's the thing Michael Malone just said in his last media availability is that the Nuggets might have to redesign their defensive philosophies. They might have to redo that. If you asked me to use some words to describe Ryan Saunders and you picked Ryan, I don't know that like defensive architect is the word, a word that would have come to mind.
But I mean, has he ever been in a position to be a defensive architect? Do we know that?
But I mean, just that is a little concerning. Like, He might be a great pianist. We don't know.
Would you just say yes when I say something, please?
Just one time.
I think with these things, a lot of things are possible. I don't know what to make of it.
I don't know.
Outside of, for sure.
Outside of the things
I'm interested, though. Every season, the Denver Nuggets have a whole host of new assistants.
I will say,
does it make a difference? I don't know.
I do this deal, by the way. I first heard of it maybe 6 weeks ago, so I think this is a thing that had been like whatever,
long time
like probably around. Before the Jordy thing was announced. Again, a lot of things happen behind the scenes that you kind of hear about. So I think this was one of those ones that has been in the works for a long time.
By the way, while we're on the topic, the Darrell Arthur Mini thing was real. That's still a possibility.
He's just still under contract. Is that it? Or
well, he's mulling. He's
really?
Considering.
I still love Darrell Arthur, man. I hope he stays in Denver, man. I just like Darrell Arthur to me is like a perfect, like, you know, he didn't have that big of an imprint on the roster.
Did you see him?
But he still wears the Gary Harris's, the 2017s. Every day he wears the same one. I love it.
I feel like that should be the pitch
to
keep him.
He was photographed the other day wearing the shorts, which I hate.
You hate, yeah.
Because they look like board shorts.
They're the Gary Harris's.
Gary Harris made, if, like, for those shorts. Who don't know, Gary Harris had a very memorable shot. He was wearing that one-off uniform with the shorts that look like board shorts, and for that reason they'll be enshrined forever in Nuggets history. But they're terrible basketball shorts.
They do look like board shorts. You're right.
100% really look like board shorts.
It's not Billabong. What's the other one? That's because I got PacSun. You could
PacSun.
Those look like you get those at PacSun.
A million percent. Yeah, you would buy the. But he was also wearing Nikola Jokic.
Is PacSun still around?
Yes.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. So you guys get that.
You are the oldest person on earth.
Yeah, dude. You don't go outside anymore, Adam.
Do I go to the mall? Who goes to the mall?
I went to the mall recently.
For what? First of all, you say this is not an old thing. You know what it is? They don't sell clothes at the mall for me.
No,
they really don't.
You have kids and we don't. That's the difference.
Adam, both old and misshapen.
I'm just misshapen is what it is. Like they don't make the clothes except for Eddie Bauer. That's why I go to Eddie Bauer.
Adam, did you ever go to Hot Topic by any chance?
Of course not.
What about Claire's? You been to Claire's?
That's like earrings, right?
How do you think I got my ears pierced?
Are we just going to name stores?
You ever been to Hot Dog on a Stick?
You guys don't know Sharper Image? That's
Hollister.
The number one. Sharper Image is the number one mall store there is.
Hollister.
If we did, we should do a draft, a snake draft.
Holy smokes.
Stores
we're going long today, Caleb. We're going into second.
You guys want
five.
A little Mervin's? Remember back in the day, Mervin's?
Then it turned to Mervin's in California.
I like this comment. Every time we appear culturally illiterate, someone's like, where's Dev?
But it's Peter. I mean, it's Buckets. I mean, come on.
Hit that like on the way out, everybody. We do have a couple of super chats. All right, what do we got?
Oh, we're done?
Hell yeah. Somebody super chatted on a Tuesday. Cool Cootie says, can Eric and Adam argue about Gary Payton again? Water under the fridge. Cement Adam. Hell yeah. So many references there. Is it really that weird to say cement?
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Super weird.
First time I've ever heard it.
Are you serious? Yeah. I feel like this is the thing. I feel like this is regional.
And I just to clear this up, we weren't arguing about Gary Payton II. We were arguing about whether or not it matters to have
Let's
Gary Payton
II. Let's do it.
I'm just saying.
Let's start
whether
again.
Or not it matters. He closed the most pivotal game of the finals, yeah, so I don't but, know. Actually, the two most pivotal games of the finals he closed,
when
but
we
whatever.
Look back, when we look back and we say, is Gary Payton II the most pivotal member of the Golden State Warriors?
Yeah.
I still say no.
That's a different argument, but okay.
That was my entire point. But Adam
frame
came
your
in
argument
hot
the way you
off
want.
Of vacation because he heard me say that he was wrong sometimes.
Yeah, he was wrong when I wasn't. That's what I was upset about. You said I was wrong and I wasn't.
But the crux of the argument is that at the end of the day, I'm going to be wrong but right. With the Warriors winning six.
Jack says, I have to ask, who's the most handsome Nugget?
We can't. I don't think we can answer that.
Who's the most handsome
Eric,
Nugget?
You can.
Yeah. No question. With a bullet, Nikola Jokic. Let's go.
There you go. Hit that like on the way out. We'll see everybody.